Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, folks. Welcome to episode 89 of the Epochs of the Loadseaters. I am joined, of course, by Bo, and today we're going to be talking about a personal hero of mine. Direct inspiration for everything I know. I'm joking. Obviously, we're talking about Caligula, one of the most evil emperors, but then that's quite a competitive title, really, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a few.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the most bizarre, I think I'd say. and we'll get into loads of anecdotes about him. Yeah. But it is really kind of cruel and unusual and bizarre, sadistic, weird.
And quite unprecedented, perverse. Isn't it?
Sorry, what?
It's unprecedented at this point, isn't it? Like, apart from, I suppose, the previous one. Maybe, you know, not unprecedented then, but like this is something that the Roman Republic hasn't really had, like a guy who's been essentially raised to be a degenerate pervert, now given supreme power over the entire empire.
How brazen it is unprecedented.
Yeah.
I've got a great quote at the end, but basically all the things that were sort of kept hidden on Capri are just that's the whole Roman world now.
Yeah.
Or anywhere where Caligula is.
It's crazy, isn't it?
One of the first things I say is that his real name's Gaius, and in all the sources, and most of the time, I'm probably referred to him as Gaius.
Yeah.
So that is Caligula.
Right. Yeah. That's fine. That's obviously, his name isn't actually Little Boots.
Right.
But the thing is, before we start, right, I have in my mind the image of the Roman Republic, and I'm picturing men like Cincinnatus. I'm picturing, you know, those. Very conservative, duty-bound, morally upstanding men who made Rome what it was. And it's hard to, well, not hard, but like, I guess, I don't know, disappointing to see how it develops.
Yeah, I think maybe it's a little bit rose-tinted because for example, like Sulla was extremely, there were prescriptions.
Extremely did nothing wrong. What?
Well, murdered everyone that disagreed with him.
Just traitors to the Republic. I'm not going to get into my solo apologetics.
But yeah, there were people that were not as cruel and unusual as someone like Nero or Caligula, but the ancient world is so much more brutal.
Yeah.
Even people like Augustus, people that have got a reputation for being nice, they're not really, still do sort of cruel executions and things.
Yeah.
Caligula takes it to a whole new level.
Hmm. But I just, it's more the perversity, really.
Right.
Because, like, if there's one thing that I think I wouldn't ascribe to the, I guess we'll call, I mean, I, you know, they're kind of ancient by this point, to the, well, you know, the contemporary Romans of Caligula's day. But, like, they didn't seem to be perverse, you know? They seemed to be actually quite straight-laced.
Right, yeah, there is loads of sex crime in this, incest.
Yeah.
All sorts of stuff.
Like this is stuff that's outside of what I would consider to be the traditional Roman character.
Yeah, right.
And so...
Yeah, Caligula is, the accounts say, and modern scholars say, he's very deliberately going against the norms.
Yeah.
Very deliberately, yeah.
And the general Roman populace probably were still relatively conservative in their, you know, as their ancestors would have been. And so they must have hated every second of this.
Yeah, a lot of them. There's a great line from Tom Holland where he says the sort of the mores, the morals of sort of the Augustan period or the late Republic, they think to Caligula, they're things to be mocked and subverted deliberately.
So Caligula was a leftist, right? Okay. Understood.
Yeah, it
was, understood.
Tommy. No.
but am I wrong?
Yeah, no.
But that's the thing, isn't it? Like Augustus, even Augustus is only what 100 years ago.
No, not yeah,
not
no,
even, yeah, not even a century.
No, it's like 23. He died 23 years ago.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay. I didn't realize it was that short a bit of time. My chronology of the early empire is actually terrible.
Caligula's the third emperor. Oh, it's God. Augustus Tiberius Caligula.
That's how. Well, I suppose Tiberius's fault, really, isn't it? But it must seem like a golden age of decency, and even then, it wasn't. So, but just compared to what's coming,
yeah. I think when you talk about someone like Cincinnatus being like an upstanding, I sort of countered with the crimes of Sulla, for example.
Yeah. But even then, they weren't perverse crimes.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Still, this is all, it's all dialed up, though. You're right in that sense.
Yeah.
It's all dialed up here.
Yeah. The thing with Caligula, like the thing with like someone like Sulla, okay, fine. He feels it necessary to kill his political enemies. Well, 2,000 years later, I don't really care. You know, there are lots of people who have killed their political enemies across all
Marius did it as well.
Yeah, everyone did it, right? Yeah. You know, like Caesar was one of the few people who didn't do it, right? And that was what actually made Caesar remarkable, is that he wanted to forgive them rather than murder them. Okay, well, fair enough. Good for Caesar. But, you know, in thousands of years, like I say, okay, people murdering each other over politics, there's nothing new and nothing especially evil about it. Like, it's wrong, obviously, from the modern liberal perspective. But in their own context, I mean, it's brutal, but, like, that's what they're like. But it's not weird and perverse, right? It's not torturing children for sexual pleasure, you know?
And this is sort of personally sadistic.
Yeah.
People like Sulla or Marius or someone certainly didn't just torture and murder people just because they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Which is what Caligula does.
Yeah. You know, they at least thought they were trying to do something right. Like Sulla thought he was writing the Republic and setting it back on its even keel and whatnot. Obviously, it didn't work, but it wasn't just out of the pleasure of hurting people.
Right, yeah. You know? And humiliating them as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Just spending your time devising ways to humiliate and torture and murder people. I mean, it's serial killer territory, right? Oh, yeah, and you choose your friends around you in your inner circle who are also good at that, have good ideas.
And who like
I mean,
this.
It's, yeah, right, it's... Perverse is the right word, I think.
I mean, it is as if a serial killer has gained control of the entire empire.
Well, that's one of the first things I wanted to say before we get into sort of the chronology of his life and the details and
Jeffrey
all the
Dahmer
anecdotes.
Is given control of the Roman Empire.
Is I want to address the question of whether he was mad, first and foremost.
Great question.
Because some people have said he is and some people have said he isn't. Mary Beard says he probably wasn't. Michael Grant, a book, I said he probably wasn't.
Yeah.
What I would say is this. I think he is. Okay. But there's a whole spectrum of madness, isn't there? That on one end of the spectrum is like very, very mild anxiety or the mildest Tourette's or something like that. Okay. You could say you're suffering from a mental illness, the very smallest degree. And then at the other end is like you're in a straitjacket in a padded room or you're like a babbling fool that can't really speak or function properly. So there's a whole spectrum. And then you've got people like actual serial killers, someone like Ted Bundy, who's perfectly capable of being polite and even suave.
See, that's how
Caligula... And yet they're a complete psychopath.
That's how Caligula comes across to me. Because a lot of the things that he devises, like I've watched loads of documentaries about Caligula because the History Channel loves him for some reason. A lot of the things he devises requires a rational understanding of the situation that's happening.
Right.
Whereas a mad person probably, I don't think, you know, someone who is mad would be like irrational and incapable of grasping the depths they were trying to plumb when it came to hurting others.
Right.
And I think Caligula knew what he was doing. And I think he was just the sort of sadistic, psychopathic killer rather than being insane. I don't think he was insane. I think he was evil.
So right there, that is sort of quite a modern definition of it. So, for example, if you say you're an actual serial killer and you go to trial and very many doctors or pathologists decide whether you're sort of clinically capable of responsibility and things.
Yeah.
Okay. So, for example, someone like Ed Gein, who dug bodies up and made lamps and furniture out of bodies, he's like a classic example of everyone says, no, he's clinically mad. He was clinically mad.
Right.
Okay. And then you've got someone like Jeffrey Dahmer or... Mm. Ted Bundy or someone, where they say, no, they should be held responsible for their crimes.
Hmm.
So in that sense, the definition you were talking about, the bar's really high. The bar then is very, very, very high to be mad. Right?
Yeah,
But you can't say that someone like Ted Bundy isn't suffering from mental illness. They're not right. Okay,
you I'm can't not really saying say they don't have a mental okay. illness. I'm right, not, and okay. I'm not saying okay. they don't have. Right. They're not the result of abuse or anything like that that's made them terrible, terrible people, which obviously in Caligula's case is obviously the case from Tiberius. I'm not saying any of that. But I think okay. when I say mad, when I think mad, I think someone who's incapable of stringing together a logical chain of thought and events.
Right.
Not whether it's good or bad, just not capable of doing it.
Okay.
Right. And so, you know, this is why they're in the straitjacket in the padded room.
Right. Right.
So I'm not saying that Caligula doesn't have mental illnesses. Obviously he's got mental illnesses. Okay. Like, God, you know, you can't do the things he did without. But he knew what he was doing when he was doing it to people.
Right. Yeah.
He knew what the consequences were going to be. And okay. he knew that this would be worse than something else that he could have done, you know? And so this, it's rational. That's the problem right. with Caligula, I think. Is that if he was just a gibbering idiot, like if he was like, what was the Charles the Sixth or whatever, who thought he was made of glass?
Yeah, that is Charles the Sixth of France.
Yeah, yeah, of France. Right, yeah.
He's Henry the Sixth of England, also just comatosed. Yeah, there's definitely a chemical imbalance in their mind.
Yeah, So they're just mad. You know, they're not like rationally thinking this through. They're mental, right? And that's fine. You know, and you know, I'm not trying to compare Charles the Sixth to Caligula either. You know, nothing of the sort. But like, Caligula isn't like that.
Right.
You know, he's actually just evil because of the abuse that he suffered when he was young from Tiberius.
He does know what he's doing.
Yeah.
There's a famous line where his torturers, he liked to sort of cut people up piecemeal sometimes, avoid their organs, make them suffer as much as possible. And one of the lines says, I want them to feel that they're dying.
God.
Yeah.
Why?
Just an extreme sadist is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he did know right from wrong. So, okay, in that sense then, in a modern court of law, he probably would be held responsible for his crimes.
Yeah.
But we agree that suffering from a mental illness, though. There's a mental illness there.
When you say mental illness, it sounds almost like a kind of mea culpa on it, right? It sounds like it's like, well, is it really his fault? It's like, no, it is his fault. He knows what he's doing. Now, I'm not saying...
I accept that.
Yeah, I'm not saying that he wasn't made this way by someone else. I don't think this is natural. Yeah, this is clearly the result of habituation and abuse by Tiberius for however many years before he finally becomes the emperor. Obviously. And I think that a lot of Syracuse probably had the same sort of experience or a similar one growing up. And that's what made them what they are. You know?
So here's some lines I want to read out, though, because some people just say he definitely wasn't mad. Mm-hmm. And there's a few lines from the ancient sources that say he sort of was, though. So that's why it's funny how often you talk about Rome or someone hears that you studied Rome and they almost always want to talk about Caligula.
He's an interesting character.
Right, yeah, it's fine. And quite often they'll say he wasn't mad and I'll say, well, there's lines in the ancient sources that say he was and they just don't know what to say to that.
But the ancient sources are saying that when they say he's mad, are they saying that he's got such a radically perverse point of view that he seems insane from a normal point of view?
Well, I can read it and people can make their own minds up. So the main sources are Philo, Cassius Dio, a bit in Josephus, but it's mainly Suetonius. Get little bits and bobs in Tacitus. Nearly all of Tacitus's account in the accounts in the annals are missing. However, just in other bits and bobs in the histories, he just mentions Caligula and things. Hmm. But it's almost the best thing is Suetonius, which you can just buy in Penguin paperback.
That's good.
So he says this. As to his health, Gaius was sick both physically and mentally. So yeah, it's just explicitly said in that line there.
Well, yeah, and I agree that he's sick. Right. But in the modern terminology, when we say madness, we mean irrational, incapable of rational.
I was going to say, modern, the bar's very high, isn't it?
Sure, but like,
very high.
Also, you could say their bar is quite low, right? Yeah, maybe, because, maybe. You know, he's sick, but that's got the view of a kind of moral judgment. Rather than a physiological judgment.
Okay, well, Suetonius says that he, Gaius himself, Caligula, he was well aware that he had mental trouble and sometimes proposed taking a leave of absence from Rome to clear his brain. Caesonia, his last wife, is reputed to have given him an aphrodisiac which drove him mad.
Yeah.
Insomnia was his worst torment. 3 hours a night of fitful sleep were all that he ever got. And even then, terrifying visions would haunt him. Once, for instance, he dreamt that he had a conversation with the sea. He tired of lying awake the greater part of the night and would alternatively sit up in bed and wander through the long corridors, invoking the day which seemed as if it would never break. I am convinced this mental illness accounted for his two contradictory vices, overconfidence and extreme timorousness.
I mean, he sounds like an insanely troubled person.
That's the impression I get. There's some sort of chemical imbalances. Apparently he had fits, maybe epilepsy, something like that. Apparently suffered from sometimes just absolutely blinding headaches. Right. And other than those few lines where it's kind of explicitly said he was mentally ill, also you can just read into how he behaves, how he acts, that he's unbalanced.
Yeah.
So not only is he incredibly cruel and unusual, the people that he likes and loves, he's massively over the top to them.
Right.
There's one particular actor, Nestor, a famous actor in Rome, that he was a big fan of.
Right.
And even though this really wasn't done, he would just go up and kiss him in public, loads. Yeah, loads. People were like, that's so weird. If people talked during his performance, he'd personally beat them up.
Don't know why that's so funny.
Yeah. But there's loads of things where, like, when we go through it, the list of things that he does, it's like, that's not normal. It's way not normal.
Yeah.
Way not normal. Like, what on earth sort of thing?
And honestly, I had to research this subject for a video that I did a few years ago, but like the effect of being like essentially ritually abused in childhood is just, I mean, it sounds a lot like this, you know, it's so obvious that this is the result of what Tiberius did to him.
Yeah. I mean, I won't deny that. It's sort of obviously the case. It's obviously true. Yeah. Like one of the things,
this isn't normal, you know. Right. Someone who comes from a healthy family doesn't end up this way.
One of the things that seems mad at the time and to me now is that he sort of insisted at one point that he was a god.
Well, yeah. I mean lots of them. Lots of them say that.
Not Romans. Not while you're alive.
Well, yeah, but yeah,
not while you're alive.
Get deified.
I mean, even deifying Caesar after his death, people are like, oh, that's so, we're not Greeks. And even Augustus and Livia, when they died, it was still like, it's a bit gauche to deify them in death. But to call yourself a god in life, that's bananas. Anyway, well, I've got a line here from modern historian Michael Grant about Caligula's madness. And lots of scholars say this, and it's a bit different to what I think, but he says, he has been variously labelled epileptic, schizoid, schizophrenic, or just chronically alcoholic. Tacitus described his mind as disordered and upset, but Caligula was probably not mad in any accepted sense of the term. The diagnosis by modern pathologists and physicians are useless because there is no adequate evidence to go on.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's fair, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think, just my opinion, take it or leave it. Mm. There's no doubt that he's certainly like severely mentally ill.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, properly mad. But he did also, though, you're right, though, he did know right from wrong. He was deliberately doing it.
He was tormented by his upbringing.
He knew how to be nice to people because he did that as well.
Yeah.
So.
And he just had perversions that were bred into him.
Extreme ones, yeah. All right, so we'll do a little bit on his early life or before his reign, but we covered a fair bit of it in the Tiberius one, so I won't go over too much. But there's a few bits that I think are interesting to go over again. I'd like these epochs to sort of stand alone if possible.
Yeah.
So his father was Germanicus, the great Germanicus, and Caligula was very, very young when he died out in Syria. A small child, what was he, like 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, something in that ballpark, old enough to remember it, but still very small. And he was out in Syria at the time and obviously experienced that trauma straight off the bat. And then there's sort of a great, not great in a good way, but there's a great image of him and his mother returning to Rome. And that the whole of Rome was grieving, really, because Germanicus was so roundly loved.
Yeah. And that's another thing as well. At least you can see it's not genetic from
that's true.
Caligula. Because his father wasn't like this at all.
No, that's right.
And everyone really liked him. He seems to be a gregarious, successful man.
Yeah.
And so how did his son turn out this way? Well, because of Tiberius.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, without the protection of Germanicus, the whole family is in sort of a perilous position sort of straight away. Suetonius says, the bitterness of their loss was aggravated by the horrors which followed, for everyone believed, and with good reason, that moral respect for Germanicus had alone kept Tiberius from displaying the cruelty of his wicked heart. So, yeah, the whole family start. It takes a few years before it all comes to a head, but they're in Tiberius's crosshairs, all of them. Yeah, there's loads of different stories about exactly when he was born and his time in camp. Won't go over them too much. Oh, actually, I'll tell the little boot story real quick because, you know, it's famous, I suppose. Suetonius says, he won his cognomen Caligula from an army joke because he grew up among the troops and wore the miniature uniform of a private soldier, an undeniable proof of the hold. Of the hold on their affections, which this early experience of camp life gave him, is that when they rioted at the news of Augustus's death and were ready for any madness, the mere sight of little Gaius calmed them down. As soon as they realized that he was being removed to a neighboring city to protect him from their violence, they were overcome by contrition.
That's very wholesome.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That's very adorable, you know. And I bet he looked adorable in his little, you know, Roman soldier uniform. Like a little 6-year-old boy in a little Roman soldier uniform. I bet it was cute as hell.
You know? Yeah.
I'd like to get my son one.
Yeah.
I bet he'd love it as well. But, yeah.
A quick line about his sort of, his character as a child or as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't move to Capri until he's 19. He doesn't become emperor until he's, 24, 25.
Right.
So there's that sort of earlier bit of his life where, as I mentioned in the Tiberius one, he basically didn't show any emotion or remorse when his members of his family were arrested, exiled, and murdered. Sort of very deliberately. That would have possibly been a death sentence for him.
Yeah.
But again, what that does to you, the psychology of that.
Well, yeah.
Again, Suetonius says, whilst on Capri, the courtiers, Tiberius's courtiers, tried every trick to force him into making complaints against Tiberius, always, however, without success. He not only failed to show any interest in the murder of his relatives, but affected an amazing indifference to his own ill treatment, behaving so obsequiously to his adopted grandfather and to the entire household, that someone said of him very neatly, never was there a better slave nor a worse master.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Because he obviously, like you say, he's 19, so he's still very young. But this is the new reality for him. You're going to be killed like everyone else. So whatever it is you're feeling, you have to overcome this and just grind under it for like 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And totally within the power of someone who is supremely evil and is abusing you every single day in every way they can conceive of.
Yeah. So Tiberius was his great uncle, but became adopted grandfather. Right. And again, for people who didn't watch Tiberius one or don't know, Caligula's mother, Agrippina the Elder, was exiled, beaten so badly once she lost an eye and in the end starved to death.
Yeah.
His two older brothers were both killed. One, forced to fall on his sword, the other also starved to death, his eldest brother also starved to death. Another quick line here from Suetonius. He said, yeah, even in those days, he could not control his natural brutality. He loved watching tortures and executions, and disguised in a wig and long robe, abandoned himself nightly to the pleasures of feasting and scandalous living. Tiberius was ready enough to indulge a passion which Gaius had for theatrical dancing and singing on the ground that it might have a civilizing influence on him. With characteristic shrewdness, the old emperor had exactly gauged the young man's vicious inclinations and would often remark that Gaius's advent portended his own death and the ruin of everyone else. Here's a quote from Tiberius. He's supposed to have said, I am nursing a viper in Rome's bosom. I am educating a phaeton for the whole world. Phaeton was a legitimate son of Apollo who took Apollo's chariot and rode it too high and fell out and burnt the whole world and then fell out of the sky and died.
Why would he want to do that?
Why would Tiberius want to do that? Yeah.
Why would he want... I'm nursing a viper for Rome's bosom.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Emperor. Why? You know...
He'd grown extremely resentful and grown to hate everyone and Rome itself. Yeah. So the thing that you mentioned, which is absolutely true, that Caligula on Capri had been sort of broken, had been turned into this sort of crazy sadist monster... Seems he was actually already sort of there. Sure. If anything, Tiberius encouraged him.
Well, this is the thing.
Happy to be encouraged and all that stuff.
This is the thing. There's one thing having like a vicious streak in you, but it's another thing having the positive and wholesome aspects of your personality brutally suppressed and destroyed, and having the vicious streak deliberately cultivated. Like, this is the only, positive release that Caligula gets, right? In every other way, it's like you can't show sadness for the death of your brothers or your mother. You know, you can't lament the good things in your life, but this guy is going to essentially praise you and guarantee you safety for engaging in debauchery, degeneracy, evil, vice, you know?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, could well be an element of that. I suspect there is an element of it.
I'm not surprised the guy couldn't sleep, you know, after going through this for however many years. And so just, you know, if that's the only outlet that you've been allowed to have for years and years, I'm not surprised this takes a dark hold on your soul.
Mm. He leans into it.
Well, what choice do you have?
Well,
it's the only security you're going to have. If Tiberius is like, yes, good, you know, I'm deliberately trying to make you as vicious as possible. You're looking for any approval as a teenager, you know.
Yeah, maybe. And then by the time when you don't have to do that anymore, though, you still do it. In fact, it's you too get late. Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah.
It's become a core part of your personality now. Maybe.
I accept that on some level.
Yeah.
Sure. It just does seem to me that there was always. Yeah, I don't. Who knows?
I'm not saying he didn't have a vicious streak, you know? Right. And you know, lots of people do, but they are also other things. You know, they also have a family life. They had a good discipline from the parents and their fathers, and you know, they've got a decent environment around them that reins all these things in. But you know, and so that stops them from being what they could be, you know, in potential. But of course, if you find someone who's got a vicious streak. Who you suppress the good and encourage nothing else but the vice, then you end up with someone like Caligula.
One of the things Tiberius would do on that island is quite often, all the time really, actually, have sort of fake, set up sort of a fake situation where it plays out a mythological story,
right?
But where someone gets raped or murdered in it, and you do the rape or murder for real, and everyone dresses up in theatrical clothes and outfits and stuff. Seems Caligula was just loved that, was just up for that. It was just, didn't really need much encouragement, actually, sort of thing. This weird mixture of real violence and sex crime and fictional stories mixed into one. No wonder it might lead to a type of mental illness or a type of madness where you sort of reality and fantasy are blurred.
It's a poisoning of the soul, isn't it? Right. Yeah, that's what Tiberius is doing here. You know, yeah. I'm not saying that, you know, Caligula doesn't have any responsibility or anything like that. But man, this is just awful.
Yeah.
It's just genuinely awful.
It's a horrible story. Yeah. This is a really horrible story.
I don't think he was destined to be this. I mean, you know, he might have been. You know, maybe, you know, more like a Sulla than a sort of Julius Caesar, right? In the disposition that he had, like maybe a cruel, slightly, you know, cold, but not necessarily debauched and perverted. But, you know, after what Tiberius has done to him, he's had the right clay, right?
Yeah, right. Well, yes, good way of putting it, I think, yeah. Quick line then on the death of Tiberius, we'll move on to his actual reign. Suetonius says, Tiberius, he issued orders for his ring to be removed. Oh, sorry, that was Caligula. He issued orders for Tiberius's ring to be removed while he was still breathing. But Tiberius would not let it go. And Caligula had him smothered with a pillow. According to one account, he throttled Tiberius with his own hands. And when a freedman cried out in protest at this wicked deed, he crucified him at once. All this may be true. Some writers report that Gaius later confessed to intended but not actual parricide. He would often boast, that is to say, of having carried a dagger into Tiberius's bedroom, but with the virtuous intention of avenging his mother and brothers. But according to his own account, he found Tiberius asleep and, restrained by feelings of pity, threw down the dagger and went out. Tiberius, he said, was perfectly aware of what had happened, yet never dared question him or take any action in the matter. The thing about Tiberius's death is we don't really know. There's a few different stories, and the ancient accounts are like, we don't know which one's true.
Well, I mean, they're on this remote Epstein Island. Who knows?
Right. Yeah. Okay. So when Tiberius first ascends to the purple, no one really knows that he's this sort of.
Caligula.
Tiberius. When Caligula first ascends to the top job, people don't really know, most people in Rome don't really know that he's got this character.
And I imagine most people in Rome didn't know what was going on in Capri, right?
Yeah, probably most people, yeah.
Yeah.
There was stories, of course, but no one, right. They know that they're living in an informal society, though, where there's like a type of terror. You know, apparently there was a popular shout to the Tiber with Tiberius.
Yeah.
Are you throwing him in the river like a common criminal?
So, which would have been fair.
But yeah. Anyway, there seems to have been some sort of initial joy or happiness that, because in lots of people's minds, in the popular mind, he was still the surviving grandson of Germanicus.
Yeah.
He was Little Boots.
Yeah.
Beloved.
Yeah.
And hopefully the horrible reign of the old man, Tiberius, will be over and we'll have a new golden age. Right. Yeah, that's the right expression.
I'm feeling the sad optimism of this. Just like, look, we've been tyrannized for 20 years by Tiberius. Maybe something good's going to happen. Yeah.
It can't get worse.
Yeah. Yeah, it can always get worse.
Suetonius says, Gaius's accession seemed to the Roman people, one might also say to the whole world, like the answer to their prayers. The memory of Germanicus and compassion for a family that had been practically wiped out by successive murders made most provincials and soldiers, many of whom had known him as a child, and the entire population of Rome as well, show extravagant joy that he was their new emperor. Apparently when he first
comes to... Well, that's because they don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah.
They're optimistic. I love the optimism of this. Hey.
Yeah. Like, when he first comes through the streets of Rome, there's quite literally sort of parades and screaming and shouting and happiness and things. Tom Holland, the great Tom Holland, in his book Dynasty, said, after the long winter of Tiberius's old age, spring, it seemed, had come at last. Yeah. And to begin with, he wasn't immediately, he didn't just sort of start murdering and raping people straight away.
Yeah.
Like on the first day. So, and in fact did a few sort of good things, sort of legally.
Like
so
what?
Just to begin with, the first thing he said, we're going to not have the whole informal society that Tiberius has. We're just doing away with all of that.
Oh, well, that's good.
And all the records we've got on everyone, I'm just going to burn them without looking at them.
Oh, well, okay. I can see why people would be mildly optimistic on his first day in office.
And even all the people that we know are informers, I'm not even going to have sort of counter trials against you. We're just going to drop everything.
That's wise.
Right.
It's actually a good move.
Oh, yeah.
That's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.